Chapter 5. Since you are in debt for your board now at the home, and I suppose you reckon the Marine office will pay in the end. Eh? So it shall. But if you don't take this chance, away you go to England, assisted passage, by the first homeward steamer that comes along. You are no better than a pauper. We don't want any white paupers here. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I scare them. But look at the trouble all this gave me. You would not have had any trouble, Captain Wally said almost involuntarily, if you had sent for me. Captain Elliot was immensely amused. He shook with laughter as he walked. But suddenly he stopped laughing. A vague recollection had crossed his mind. Hadn't he heard it said at the time of the Travancore and Deccan smash that poor Wally had been cleaned out completely? Ello's hard up, by heavens! He thought, and at once he cast a sidelong upward glance at his companion. But Captain Wally was smiling austerely straight before him, with a carriage of the head inconceivable in a penniless man, and he became reassured. Impossible. Could not have lost everything. That ship had been only a hobby of his. And the reflection that a man who had confessed to receiving that very morning a presumably large sum of money was not likely to spring upon him a demand for a small loan put him entirely at his ease again. There had come a long pause in their talk, however, and not knowing how to begin again, he growled out soberly, "We old fellows ought to take a rest now. The best thing for some of us would be to die at the oar," Captain Wally said negligently. "Come, now. Aren't you a bit tired by this time of the whole show?" muttered the other sullenly. "Are you?" Captain Elliot was infernally tired. He only hung on to his berth so long in order to get his pension on the highest scale before he went home. It would be no better than poverty, anyhow. Still, it was the only thing between him and the workhouse. And he had a family. 3 girls, as Wally knew. He gave Harry, old boy, to understand that these 3 girls were a source of the greatest anxiety and worry to him. Enough to drive a man distracted. "Why, what have they been doing now?" asked Captain Wally with a sort of amused absent-mindedness. "Doing? Doing nothing. That's just it. Lawn tennis and silly novels from morning to night. If one of them at least had been a boy. But all 3. And, as ill luck would have it, there did not seem to be any decent young fellows left in the world. When he looked around in the club he saw only a lot of conceited popinjays too selfish to think of making a good woman happy. Extreme indigence stared him in the face with all that crowd to keep at home. He had cherished the idea of building himself a little house in the country in Surrey, to end his days in, but he was afraid it was out of the question. And his staring eyes rolled upwards with such a pathetic anxiety that Captain Wally charitably nodded down at him, restraining a sort of sickening desire to laugh. "You must know what it is yourself, Harry. Girls are the very devil for worry and anxiety. Eh? But mine is doing well," Captain Wally pronounced slowly, staring to the end of the avenue. The master attendant was glad to hear this. Uncommonly glad. He remembered her well. A pretty girl she was. Captain Wally, stepping out carelessly, assented as if in a dream. She was pretty. The procession of carriages was breaking up. One after another they left the file, to go off at a trot, animating the vast avenue with their scattered life and movement. But soon the aspect of dignified solitude returned, and took possession of the straight wide road. A syce in white stood at the head of a Burma pony harnessed to a varnished two-wheel cart, and the whole thing waiting by the curb seemed no bigger than a child's toy forgotten under the soaring trees. Captain Elliot waddled up to it, and made as if to clamber in, but refrained, and keeping one hand resting easily on the shaft, he changed the conversation from his pension, his daughters, and his poverty back again to the only other topic in the world, the Marine Office, the men and the ships of the port. He proceeded to give instances of what was expected of him, and his thick voice drowsed in the still air like the obstinate droning of an enormous bumblebee. Captain Wally did not know what was the force or the weakness that prevented him from saying goodnight and walking away. It was as though he had been too tired to make the effort. How queer. More queer than any of Ned's instances. Or was it that overpowering sense of idleness alone that made him stand there and listen to these stories? Nothing very real had ever troubled Ned Elliott, and gradually he seemed to detect deep in, as if wrapped up in the gross wheezy rumble, something of the clear hearty voice of the young captain of the Ringdove. He wondered if he too had changed to the same extent, and it seemed to him that the voice of his old chum had not changed so very much, that the man was the same. Not a bad fellow, the pleasant, jolly Ned Elliott, friendly, well up to his business and always a bit of a humbug. He remembered how he used to amuse his poor wife. She could read him like an open book. When the Condor and the Ringdove happened to be in port together, she would frequently ask him to bring Captain Elliott to dinner. They had not met often since those old days. Not once in 5 years, perhaps. He regarded from under his white eyebrows this man he could not bring himself to take into his confidence at this juncture, and the other went on with his intimate outpourings, and as remote from his ear as though he had been talking on a hilltop a mile away. He was in a bit of a quandary now as to the steamer Sofala. Ultimately every hitch in the port came into his hands to undo. They would miss him when he was gone in another 18 months, and most likely some retired naval officer had been pitchforked into the appointment, a man that would understand nothing and care less. That steamer was a coasting craft having a steady trade connection as far north as Tenasserim, but the trouble was she could get no captain to take her on her regular trip. Nobody would go in her. He really had no power, of course, to order a man to take a job. It was all very well to stretch a point on the demand of a consul general, but... What's the matter with the ship? Captain Wally interrupted in measured tones. Nothing's the matter. Sound old steamer. Her owner has been in my office this afternoon tearing his hair. Is he a white man? Asked Wally in an interested voice. He calls himself a white man, answered the master attendant scornfully. But if so, it's just skin deep and no more. I told him that to his face too. But who is he, then? He's the chief engineer of her. See that, Harry? I see, Captain Wally said thoughtfully. He engineer. I see. How the fellow came to be a shipowner at the same time was quite a tale. He came out third in a home ship nearly 15 years ago, Captain Elliott remembered, and got paid off after a bad sort of row both with his skipper and his chief. Anyway, they seemed jolly glad to get rid of him at all costs. Clearly a mutinous sort of chap. Well, he remained out here, a perfect nuisance, everlastingly shipped and unshipped, unable to keep a berth very long. Pretty nigh went through every engine room afloat belonging to the colony. Then suddenly, what do you think happened, Harry? Captain Wally, who seemed lost in a mental effort, as of doing a sum in his head, gave a slight start. He really couldn't imagine. The master attendant's voice vibrated dully with hoarse emphasis. The man actually had the luck to win the second prize in the Manila Lottery. All these engineers and officers of ships took tickets in that gamble. It seemed to be a perfect mania with them all. Everybody expected now that he would take himself off home with his money and go to the devil in his own way. Not at all. The Sofala, judged too small and not quite modern enough for the sort of trade she was in, could be got for a moderate price from her owners, who had ordered a new steamer from Europe. He rushed in and bought her. This man had never given any signs of that sort of mental intoxication the mere fact of getting hold of a large sum of money may produce, not till he got a ship of his own, but then he went off his balance all at once. came bouncing into the Marine office on some transfer business, with his hat hanging over his left eye, and switching a little cane in his hand, and told each one of the clerks separately that nobody could put him out now. It was his turn. There was no one over him on Earth, and there never would be either. He swaggered and strutted between the desks, talking at the top of his voice, and trembling like a leaf all the while, so that the current business of the office was suspended for the time he was in there, and everybody in the big room stood open-mouthed looking at his antics. Afterwards he could be seen during the hottest hours of the day with his face as red as fire rushing along up and down the quays, to look at his ship from different points of view. He seemed inclined to stop every stranger he came across, just to let them know that there would be no longer anyone over him. He had bought a ship. Nobody on Earth could put him out of his engine room now. Good bargain as she was, the price of the Cephala took up pretty near all the lottery money. He had left himself no capital to work with. That did not matter so much, for these were the halcyon days of steam coasting trade, before some of the home shipping firms had thought of establishing local fleets to feed their main lines. These, when once organized, took the biggest slices out of that cake, of course, and by a squad of confounded German tramps turned up east of Suez Canal, and swept up all the crumbs. They prowled on the cheap to and fro along the coast, and between the islands, like a lot of sharks in the water ready to snap up anything you let drop. And then the high old times were over for good. For years the Cephala had made no more, he judged, than a fair living. Captain Elliot looked upon it as his duty in every way, to assist an English ship to hold her own. And it stood to reason, that if for want of a captain the Cephala began to miss her trips she would very soon lose her trade. There was the quandary. The man was too impracticable. Too much of a beggar on horseback from the first, he explained. Aimed to grow worse as the time went on. In the last 3 years he's run through 11 skippers. He had tried every single man here, outside of the regular lines. I had warned him before that this would not do. And now, of course, no one will look at the Cephala. I had one or two men up at my office and talked to them. But, as they said to me, what was the good of taking the berth, to lead a regular dog's life for a month, and then get the sack at the end of the first trip? The fellow, of course, told me it was all nonsense. There has been a plot hatching for years against him. And now it had come. All the horrid sailors in the port had conspired to bring him to his knees, because he was an engineer. Captain Elliot emitted a throaty chuckle. And the fact is, that if he misses a couple more trips he need never trouble himself to start again. He won't find any cargo in his old trade. There's too much competition nowadays for people to keep their stuff lying about for a ship that does not turn up when she's expected. It's a bad lookout for him. He swears he will shut himself on board and starve to death in his cabin rather than sell her, even if he could find a buyer. And that's not likely in the least. Not even the Japs would give her insured value for her. It isn't like selling sailing ships. Steamers do get out of date, besides getting old. He must have laid by a good bit of money though, observed Captain Wally quietly. The harbor master puffed out his purple cheeks to an amazing size. Not a stiver, Harry. Not a single stiver. He waited. But as Captain Wally, stroking his beard slowly, looked down on the ground without a word, he tapped him on the forearm, tiptoed, and said in a hoarse whisper, "The Manila lottery has been eating him up." He frowned a little, nodding in tiny affirmative jerks. They all were going in for it. A third of the wages paid to ship's officers and my port, he snorted, went to Manila. It was a mania. That fellow Massey had been bitten by it like the rest of them from the first, but after winning once he seemed to have persuaded himself he had, only to try again, to get another big prize. He had taken dozens and scores of tickets for every drawing since. What with his vice and his ignorance of affairs, ever since he had improvidently bought that steamer he had been more or less short of money. This, in Captain Elliot's opinion, gave an opening. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.